This is Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. Political reporters can finally stop refreshing results from Clark counties, Nevada, and Washington. Several races are still too close to call, but the big national picture of the midterms looks to be that Republicans will likely take a very slim majority in the House, while Democrats hold on to a one-seat edge in the Senate ahead of yet another special election runoff in Georgia. I'm just tired for all those folks getting all those mailers and door knocks. Locally, we had some surprising results that helped deflate the GOP's hopes for a midterm bonanza. And Jim Bruner with the Seattle Times is here to talk about what happened and what we're still waiting to learn. Hey, Jim, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
So let's dial in first on that third district in Southwest Washington, where the Democrat Marie Glusenkamp Perez stunned the national press with an upset against Republican Joe Kent. And you talked to Representative-elect Glusenkamp Perez on Saturday. How did she pull it off?
Yeah, well, I think that this definitely was one of the most surprising results in the country. A lot of people didn't see it coming, at least as of a few months ago. I thought it was super unlikely. So I think what happened here is you had a Republican candidate, Joe Kent, who, you know, who was endorsed by Donald Trump and beat Representative Jamie Hurra Butler in the primary, largely because, you know, she had voted to impeach Trump. Coming out of that primary, Joe Kent ran as a sort of full-on Trumpist MAGA Republican, you know, an America First Republican. He didn't really do much to moderate his views. After the primary, he said at a meeting, which coincidentally was a conference of basically 2020 election deniers, of which he's won, he said, this primary proves, you know, the fact that I won proves that the third district in Southwest Washington, you know, which is right across the river from Portland, is deep red MAGA country. And I think that was a fundamental misread of the third district. And it is basically what led to his loss. You know, the third district leans Republican. It's had a Republican, well, one Republican in office there since 2010, basically. But it's a little bit purplish. I mean, it voted for Trump by, I think, 4 percentage points or something like that.
Yeah, just under 4 points.
Yeah. And so Kent went around basically not really moderating his views, not hiding his views. He ran on a platform mostly of saying he was going to wage basically hardcore political warfare, not just against the Biden administration and against the, you know, Nancy Pelosi, but even against establishment Republicans. He said his first priority going back there was going to be to impeach Joe Biden. He wanted to halt all immigration, almost all legal immigration, even to the United States, and aid to Ukraine, launch a bunch of investigations of the FBI and other things. At a debate, he said Americans should have all of the same weaponry that the military has, including machine guns. And so his views wound up being out of step with the kind of center of the third district, and a number of Jamie Hurra Butler supporters crossed over and voted for the Democrat Marie Glusenkamp Perez, who ran a really pretty good campaign, had a bunch of volunteers out, you know, making sure that Democrats knew the stakes in that race. And I think that's what made the difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Glusenkamp Perez is a gun owner, and she was relatively to the right of the rest of her party on gun ownership. And I think this shows that the loss of Hurra Butler in the primary was tough in a purple district like this. We did see split ticket voters, according to numbers for Tiffany Smiley, the Republican candidate for Senate in that district in the third. Tiffany Smiley is outrunning Joe Kent, signaling that there are some voters who decided that for Senate they would go Republican and in the House race they would vote for Glusenkamp Perez. It's an interesting phenomenon. Does this 2022 midterm result signal to you, Jim, that the MAGA brand of Donald Trump is officially toxic in all parts of Washington state?
Well, I wouldn't want to write it off entirely. I mean, clearly it's still Joe Kent had a lot of support. You know, he almost won. Now, how much of that is pure MAGA Trump support, and how much of it is just people saying, well, I don't necessarily agree with everything, but really don't want Democrats to have control of the House. I think that something we'll be unpacking for a while. But, you know, you're right. There was some ticket splitting that went on here. There were some notable Republicans in the district who publicly said, I can't vote for Joe Kent. I'm going to endorse the Democrat. That's incredibly rare in politics. It's been happening more in the Trump era, you know, with the rise of the sort of never Trump movement. You pointed out, too, that Glusenkamp Perez tried to run, you know, to the right of the broader Democratic Party. It's kind of interesting. She really emphasized her rural roots. She and her husband built a house in rural Skamania County. They co-own a auto repair shop. So she has kind of a different profile. One thing she didn't talk about, which I think was smart and kind of funny, that in a way that she didn't get the Kent people didn't seize on it more. She's been a member of the Democratic National Committee. So she's not somebody who's just outside of politics, but that's something that she didn't emphasize in her campaign.
Sure. How about the result in the 8th District, which stretches from Sammamish and Issaquah over the mountains to Wenatchee? Incumbent Kim Schreier held on there against businessman and lawyer Matt Larkin. Anything stand out to you about that race or any lessons that we can draw from it?
Yeah, I think that was part and parcel of what we saw nationally, where ever since the Supreme Court's ruling ending, you know, 50 years of what had been considered a constitutional right to abortion, to make choices on abortion, it turned this election into away from being just a referendum on the ruling party, on the Democrats, on the Biden administration, which is usual in a, you know, midterm that the majority party gets shellacked. And it turned it into a choice. You know, you may not be happy about inflation or some of the other things the Biden administration has done, the chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan or whatever, but do you want to support the party that is behind this movement to restrict abortion? You know, as soon as that ruling came down, a bunch of states enacted pretty wide-ranging abortion bans. And in specifically in the Schreier race, her opponent, Matt Larkin, the Republican, he's a business owner and attorney, he staked out the farthest right position on abortion in the primary among the Republicans. His opponents included Reagan Dunn, who was kind of more of a pro-choice Republican. He said the government shouldn't really play a role necessarily. Matt Larkin came out for a federal abortion ban with no exceptions for rape or incest. And so Schreier and the Democrats were able to say, look, you know, this is a choice election. You know, the Democrats would say, we care about inflation too. You might not be, you know, happy about the way they handled it. They passed the, you know, Inflation Reduction Act, for example, and of course costs are still a problem, but they were able to turn it into a choice, and that wound up being decisive.
It's interesting because Schreier, again, like you said, ran heavily on her support for choice and being a doctor in Congress. And after the Dobbs decision, there was this feeling that Democrats and especially women would be extremely motivated to come out to the polls. But then as this election neared, that expectation kind of faded. And there was conversation about Republicans pivoting to issues like inflation and issues like crime. I mean, Matt Larkin ran heavily on the make crime illegal again slogan, and that was supposed to be, you know, top of mind for voters going into their vote in the midterm. But you saw in some exit polling, Jim, I understand that there were other concerns on their mind, and abortion was chief among them.
Yeah, I think that showed up in some national exit polling. And then also the Seattle Times co-sponsored a poll that showed that in Washington state, abortion was right up there. And I think even above inflation in the minds of voters. And again, I think the Republicans, they banged on that issue a lot, which, you know, if the Democrats had been in the same position, they would be doing the same thing. But they didn't necessarily, I think, convince enough voters that they had a plan to deal with it. You know, their midterm agenda kind of included tax cuts, things like that. The one thing that they did talk about was energy prices and ramping up domestic energy production. But certainly Larkin in the campaign, I don't think had, you know, really specific convincing answers on how he would turn it around, other than he said he would cut government spending, mostly, you know, in an unspecified way, and argued that would turn it around. But it's not like in this race, you know, that the Democrats were saying we're pro inflation, you know, or pro cost, you know, making costs higher. In fact, you know, they Representative Schreier and others pointed to laws that they passed that included efforts to reduce costs on the average consumer or voter, including, you know, helping out with childcare costs, capping insulin, and things like that. So they had a counter argument, and it was just enough, you know, to blunt the alleged red wave, which never really materialized.
Mm-hmm. Big picture, as we've been talking about, an unpopular president dealing with high inflation with historical context considered, the expectation is they would get buried in the midterms. Biden seems to have skated with control of the Senate and a thin retaking of the House by Republicans, but very, very thin margin there. And Kevin McCarthy will have a hard time wrangling that caucus. What did pundits and journalists and politicians themselves miss here, Jim?
Yeah, I think it's a mixed bag. If you look at when people critique the media at large, I think, you know, they're to some extent cherry picking. They saw a headline here, a headline there. I think there were examples, you know, of headlines saying that we're not so sure, you know, this might not be the outcome. But yeah, there certainly were a lot of pundits and some polling even that tried to indicate that this was going to be a massive red wave. And that's somewhat understandable. I mean, when you do look at the historical picture, that's what always happens. And so you kind of think that, you know, the past is prologue to what's happening. I kind of thought that prior to the August primary, after the primary happened in Washington State, we really saw evidence that probably wasn't going to happen here. It probably was not going to be a red wave. I'd also say that, you know, you look at the third district, the Glusenkamp-Perez, Joe Kent race, there were some weird things going on with prognostication, you know, the political site 538, which makes all kinds of predictions. They had a model that said that Joe Kent was 98% favored to win that race. Obviously, you know, I guess you could still, you know, get that 2% and say, well, we said it was possible. It certainly didn't show it as close as, you know, it was kind of clearly becoming in the final days. And I think that was partly based on the fact that there wasn't a lot of polling, not a lot of public polling in that race. So they were relying on very few data points. And when that happens, maybe you should just say, you know, we're not going to pretend that we have a model in this race. There's just not enough polling. And maybe there'll be some reconsideration of that. Last thing I'll say is there was also a lot of or some effort by Republican polling firms and operatives to flood the zone later in the campaign with a bunch of polls that, for example, in Washington State showed that Patty Murray was tied with Tiffany Smiley. You look at the results and it was a blowout. I mean, that was not credible polling. You just have to wonder if it was, you know, if they were just making it up or trying to put their hand, you know, foot on the scale there. And then I think some of those national modeling predictions may have taken some of that partisan polling into account, and people are going to have to, you know, look back and see how much they should weigh that.
Where are you at now with these elections, Jim? What kind of questions do you still have going forward, and what kind of storylines are you going to be following in the days ahead in the Seattle Times?
I mean, going forward, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how these last, there's some legislative races in Washington State that are uncalled, for example. Republicans clearly are not going to make real inroads against the Democratic trifecta here of the governor, state Senate, state House, but we'll see how that plays out in the end. And then it's going to be really interesting to see, you know, again, this Marie Glusenkamp-Perez story is really, really fascinating. She's in Washington, D.C. right now for new member orientation. And it's a real surprise addition to the congressional delegation here. Now, Democrats have 8 of the 10 House seats. Republicans only have 2. So going forward, I'm sure that race will be immediately targeted again in 2024. And, you know, it's never too early to start thinking about 2024.
Oh, man. Are they ever going to push that new member orientation later now that we have so many mail-in ballots and the counting takes so long?
Right.
There's been so many points where, you know, new members end up having to go home without without joining the House.
And sometimes you get both candidates there. Last week, Joe Kent was saying, well, I'm going to be in D.C. too for, you know, new member. And you know, but I'm not sure he made it there. And he's been... Should just say he hasn't conceded, and his campaign over the weekend was texting out about maybe there's voter fraud. Of course, there's no evidence of that. They're also saying, you know, we're urging people to cure ballots. You know, make sure that if your signature was challenged, that you get it fixed. And of course, that's perfectly legitimate. Both parties do that. There's nothing wrong with that. But the margin is just not, you know, conceivable that he could come back.
Yeah. Seattle Times politics reporter Jim Bruner, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Soundside. Don't forget you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime right here online at KUOW.org. or of course on your favorite podcast app.